This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Today on Sandy Adams Radio, Pastor Sandy will begin teaching in 1 Samuel chapter 24.
You know, many of David's phrases from the Psalms, I think, come from his time in En-Gedi. Here are a few examples. As the deer pants for the water brooks, so pants my soul for you, O God. He may have written that as he was watching a couple of deer lapping up the water out of a waterfall nearby. He makes my feet like the feet of deer and sets me on high places. And you can go to En-Gedi and you can look up on the rocks that surround the oasis, and there are all kinds of animals that are, you know, for us, we'd barely be able to walk along those ledges, but they have those solid feet and those steady gates where they can climb all around the rocks and be secure. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. And there are numerous caves all over the cliffs above En-Gedi. They're the perfect shelter from heat and wind and rain and Saul. They provide him the Israel's fugitive, the shelter that he needs. Well, chapter 24 begins. Now it happened, when Saul had returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, "Take note, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats. And today, when you go to En-Gedi, you'll notice the ibex, or the wild mountain goats. They still roam the cliffs of En-Gedi, and sometimes they don't just roam the cliffs. Sometimes they come down into the parking lot to eat the trash you leave behind. The rocks of the wild goats. So he came to the sheepfolds by the road where there was a cave, and Saul went in to attend to his needs. In other words, Saul stops for a potty break. Did you know that in ancient times, constipation was known as the curse of the kings? It's true. Apparently, the king's rich foods and the stress of his job made constipation a common ailment among royalty. Evidently, Saul had the opposite problem. He ducked into a cave to attend to his needs. David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave. Oh my. The lookout spotted Saul's troops. David ordered his men to hide in these caves above En-Gedi. Saul's caravan stops right in front of the cave that David and his chief leaders occupy. Talk about drama. Here it is. This is amazing. David can't believe it. Saul is just a few yards away. And when Saul comes in out of the bright sunlight into that dark cave, he can't see David's men in the shadows. His grunts must have drowned out their whispers. Verse 4 says, "Then the men of David said to him, 'This is the day of which the Lord said to you, Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you.'" David, what an answer to prayer. God has arranged this encounter. Constipation is on our side. Here's an opportunity, David, for you to kill Saul before he kills you. And David arose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Understand, the borders of a king or priest robe represented their authority. And to clip off the corner of a robe was actually an insult. It would be the equivalent of our slap in the face, a mockery of his office. David didn't kill Saul, but there was obviously a little bitterness in his heart, and he feels guilty about it. Verse 5. Now it happened afterward that David's heart troubled him, because he had cut Saul's robe. And he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." You know, Saul may have been a madman, but he was still God's man. And until God removed Saul, David's job was to respect the king. And David felt sorry. He felt guilty for having mocked the king and clipped off his robe. Remember, David was a man motivated by principle, not just convenience. David was a man who was internally motivated, not motivated by circumstance. And so David restrained his servants with these words and did not allow them to rise against Saul. And Saul got up from the cave and went on his way. Hey, in our battle with wickedness, we need to remember that a good cause doesn't justify wicked tactics. A good cause doesn't justify wicked tactics. Our enemy beats us only when he gets us to act like him. As Romans 12, verse 21 tells us, overcome evil with good. Don't fight evil for evil. Overcome evil with good. In his book, A Tale of Three Kings, I recommend it. It's a wonderful book. Gene Edwards imagines the conversation between one of David's men, Joab, and David himself after Saul had left the cave. Listen to these words. Joab complains, "Why, David, why? Many times he almost speared you in the castle. Finally, you run away. Now, for years, you've been nothing but a rabbit for him to chase. Furthermore, the whole world believes the lies he tells about you. He has come hunting every cave and pit and hole to find you and kill you like a dog. But tonight, you had him at the end of his own spear, and you did nothing. Look at us. We're animals again. Less than an hour ago, you could have freed us all. Why, David? Why did you not end these years of misery?" There was a long silence. David slowly and with a gentleness said, "Because once, long ago, he was not mad. He was young. He was great. Great in the eyes of God and men. And it was God who made him king. God, not men." Joab blazed back. "But now he's mad, and God is no longer with him. And David, he will yet kill you." This time, it was David's answer that blazed with fire. He said, "Better he kill me than I learn his ways. Better he kill me than I become as he is. I shall not practice the ways that cause kings to go mad. I will not throw spears, nor allow hatred to grow in my heart. I will not avenge, not now, not ever." And Gene Edwards concludes, "That night, men went to bed on cold, wet stone and muttered about their leaders' distorted, masochistic views of relationships to kings. Angels went to bed that night too and dreamed in the afterglow of that rare, rare day that God might yet be able to give his authority to a trustworthy vessel." Our enemy beats us only when he causes us to act like him. Verse 8. "David also arose afterward, went out of the cave, and he called out to Saul, saying, 'My lord the king!' And when Saul looked behind him, David stopped with his face to the earth and bowed down. And David said to Saul, 'Why do you listen to the words of men who say, indeed, David seeks your harm? Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you, but my eye spared you. And I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father, see, yes, see the corner of your robe in my hand.'" He held it up and shook it. "For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you." And I can see Saul yanking at his robe, you know, looking around, checking to see if that piece really matched with the cut in his robe, and it did. "Yet you hunt my life to take it. Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you. But my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancients says, wickedness proceeds from the wicked." In other words, wicked is as wicked does. attitudes reveal themselves in actions. But David is just the opposite. David plays by God's rules, even when the enemy doesn't. He says, but my hand shall not be against you. And notice he says it twice for emphasis. After whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom do you pursue? A dead dog? A flea? In other words, I'm no threat to you, king. I'm just a dead dog. I'm just a flea. Therefore, let the Lord be judge and judge between you and me and see and plead my case and deliver me out of your hand. David believes that vengeance belongs to the Lord, that settling the score is God's responsibility, not his. Do you believe that? Do you believe that vengeance belongs to the Lord? David believes that God vindicates the righteous. It's not up to him and it's not up to us. Jesus said, too, that our job is to love our enemies. It's to do good to those who hate us and persecute us. And so it was, when David had finished speaking these words to Saul, that Saul said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And then he said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have rewarded me with good, whereas I have rewarded you with evil. And you have shown this day how you have dealt well with me, for when the Lord delivered me into your hand, you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him get away safely? Therefore, may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And now I know indeed that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. Therefore, swear now to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after me, and that you will not destroy my name from my father's house." So David swore to Saul, and Saul went home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. Saul had said all the right words before, hadn't he? David doesn't trust him. David won't feel safe from Saul's jealousy until Saul is in the grave. Chapter 25. Then Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him and buried him at his home in Ramah. And Samuel was a much beloved figure. Imagine dying and the whole nation come to your funeral. You remember Samuel was the prophet of prayer, and he had spent a lifetime interceding on behalf of the nation Israel. No wonder he was so loved. He was the one who helped them transition from the period of the judges into the period of the kings. And it was fitting that the whole nation gathered together at Ramah to pay their final respects. Even David came to Ramah to honor Samuel. It seems that maybe he and Saul had a sort of a ceasefire, at least until they could get Samuel buried. And David arose after the funeral, and he went to the wilderness of Paran, which was even further south, down in the Negev. Now, there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, which means scoundrel. And Nabal was a real scoundrel. And the name of his wife, Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance. Abigail was a babe with brains. I guess you could say she was hot and holy at the same time. Or maybe you shouldn't say that. I'm not sure. But we're told Nabal was a man who was harsh and evil in his doings. And he was of the house of Caleb. If ever there was a case of Beauty and the Beast, this was it. Nabal and Abigail were husband and wife, but they were poles apart. If ever a couple could have been classified as unequally yoked, it would have been this. Abigail was a believer. She was a godly young woman. Nabal was an unbeliever. In fact, he was a scoundrel. Verse 4. When David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, peace to you, peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. Now I have heard that you have shears. Your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them all the while that they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. In other words, we've done you a favor, Nabal, and now it's time for you to do us a favor. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants and to your son David. So when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these words in the name of David and waited. And of course, David expects Nabal to reciprocate. One good turn deserves another. Then Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master." The implication is that David is just another flash-in-the-pan rebel on the run from the king. "Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shears and give it to men when I do not know where they are from?" So David's young men turned on their heels, and they went back. And they came and told him all these words. And then David said to his men, "Every man gird on his sword." So every man girded on his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with the supplies. David and his men, they gird on their swords. They get ready to rumble. They're going to take Nabal to the woodshed. Nobody thumbs their nose in our face and gets away with it. Now, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them. But the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. They were a wall to us both by night and day, all the time we were with them keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, know and consider what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him. Even his own servants disgusted with him." Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on donkeys. And she said to her servants, "Go on before me. See, I am coming after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. So it was, as she rode on the donkey, that she went down under cover of the hill, and there was David and his men coming down toward her, and she met them, cut them off at the pass. Now David had said, "Surely in vain I have protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belongs to him, and he has repaid me evil for good. May God do so and more also to the enemies of David if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light." He's out for blood. Verse 23. Now when Abigail saw David, she hastened to dismount from the donkey, fell on her face before David and bowed down to the ground. And so she fell at his feet and said, "On me, my Lord, on me let this iniquity be. And please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant. Please let not my Lord regard the scoundrel Nabal." She's a wife that called it like it was. Whenever I act like a scoundrel, my wife always calls it like it is. Anybody got one of those wives that just kind of tells you like it is? Chickens. "For as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now, therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek harm from my Lord be as Nabal. And now this present which your maidservant has brought to my Lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespasses of your maidservant, for the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. Yet a man has risen to pursue you and seek your life, but the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God, and the lies of your enemies he shall sling out as from the pocket of a sling." She hopes that all of David's enemies will be bound up together and slung around God's head, and then all his enemies just slung out of his life. "And it shall come to pass, when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you nor offense of my heart to my Lord, either that you have shed blood without cause or that my Lord has avenged himself." In other words, when David is crowned king, he won't give Nabal's little incident here a second thought. You know, why blemish his record, you know, with a bloodbath here? "But when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant." Then David said to Abigail, "Blessed is the Lord God of Israel who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, and blessed are you because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand." Evidently, David had run out of restraint dealing with Saul. And Nabal would have tasted David's fury if it hadn't have been for Abigail's intercession. "For indeed, as the Lord God of Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hastened and come to meet me, surely by morning light, no males would have been left to Nabal." So David received from her hand what she had brought him and said to her, "Go in peace to your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respected your person." Isn't it interesting that the same person who showed such patience with Saul had so little tolerance for Nabal? Isn't that interesting? Saul chunks spears at David. He chases him across the country like a rabbit and makes his life miserable. And yet David doesn't dare touch God's anointed. All Nabal does is hold back some rations. And David is ready to wipe him out. Isn't it interesting? With the big challenges, we all tend to rise to the occasion, don't we? We scrutinize our motive. We do our best to walk in the Spirit, to keep the flesh in check. It's the Nabals in our life, though, that frustrate us. The unexpected, the unprepared, the hassles, the injustices that pop up, the little things that get our goat. That's what causes us problems. Oh, we can deal with the Saul, but it's the Nabal that eats at us. He gets us angry. Before we know it, we're walking in our own craftiness and we're pursuing our own vindictiveness. A.W. Pink, he says this, "The strongest are as weak as water as soon as the power of the Spirit is withdrawn. The most mature acts foolishly the moment he is left to himself. None of us has reserved strength or wisdom to draw from. Our source of sufficiency is treasured up in Christ. And as soon as communion with him is broken, as soon as we cease looking alone to him for help, we are helpless." This is exactly what happened to David. Thankfully, a wise gal came to his rescue, which is exactly what has saved me from many foolish, impulsive mistakes. A wise gal, my wife.
Pastor Sandy has been teaching through the book of 1 Samuel, an Old Testament book that's full of accounts of men and women who displayed incredible faith and trust in God. Samuel's own mother had a sincere loyalty to her God, trusting that he would come through for her in providing a child. What a great man of God Samuel became. He was a mentor and counselor to Saul and to David. Perhaps you're at a place in life where you have the opportunity to be a mentor or help counsel others. This is a privilege, and you may not realize what an encouragement or voice of wisdom you might be able to offer another family, couple, or individual. Don't discount the ways that God can use you for His kingdom. If you'd like to listen to more messages like this one, go to sandyadams.org. There's a whole archive of messages from Pastor Sandy. You can also download our mobile app too, so you have these messages with you on the go. If you want to get in touch with us over the phone, you can do that as well. Give us a call at 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. Our time with you today is about up, but we hope you'll join Pastor Sandy again as he continues teaching in the book of 1 Samuel. Come back, ready to learn more, right here on Sandy Adams Radio.